Why don't we get started? Our time is fairly short, and I know there will be additional people joining us. This is actually a very good turnout for 8 o'clock on a Friday morning. My name is Jennifer Cook. I'm director of the Africa program here at CSIS, and I'm delighted to be hosting this today with Janine Scott of the U.S. Angola Chamber of Commerce, and to welcome our guests, Mr. Da Costa and Mr. Deborah. I'm going to mangle the names. I have Portuguese tapes at home that I'm going to start studying regularly. We're particularly delighted because this comes as the CSIS AFRICOM really seeks to launch a working group in Angola over the course of the coming year. Our sense is that it's obviously Angola as an important regional player, Angola making tremendous progress since the end of the Civil War, but with major challenges in development, in wealth distribution, in urbanization, in civic participation, outstanding. Election upcoming next year, which may entail some political shifts and at least from an external point of view, maybe some uncertainties about who's who and so forth. The U.S. relationship obviously has had its ups and downs in history. I think there's obviously with the Civil War, but also more recently with the banking issue. And just I think a lack of kind of that confident kind of engagement that I hope we're seeking to help promote here. I think many perceptions in Washington have been somewhat frozen over time and not acknowledging the changes that are taking place within Angola. One thing is that there are few analysts here in Washington and few debates that go on about Angola, kind of really grounded, and so we tend to turn to the same voices again and again for information. And I think it's really important to be having Angolan voices here, highlighting those kind of on-the-ground changes. The U.S. State Department, and I think this was one of the key elements of the new Obama administration's Africa policy, was strengthening partnerships with big African powers that, to some extent, where relationships have been somewhat neglected, I think, or kind of put on autopilot in a way. And I think there's a big effort to re-engage Angola to strengthen and expand that relationship. And that's something I hope we can support. Expand beyond the oil sector, broaden private sector interest, look at engagement opportunities in health, in agriculture, in diversification, in water, and in regional affairs. So that's something we're hoping to do over the course of this coming year. Again, strong emphasis on bringing Angolan voices here to speak to those issues. We're delighted to have the Deputy Chief of Mission from the Angolan Embassy here, Mr. Cordo. Ambassador Ribeiro, we've reached out to him. He just got back from New York late last night, so couldn't join us today. But I welcome you all. We'd love to engage you over the course of the year, getting suggestions of individuals coming through, of ideas of kind of how to structure some of these working groups. Again, I'll try to keep it short so that we leave our speakers ample time. I'll turn over to Janine to introduce our guests and launch the discussion.
Good morning, everyone. And again, as Jennifer said, thank you for coming to what is the first of this series and partnering with CIS for us to really take a fresh look at Angola today. Without taking winds from the sail of our speakers, Angola is one of the fastest growing economies in the world today. It's the third largest trading partner with the U.S. It's one of the three binational agreements that we have that we're working on with the U.S. government. On top of that, the U.S. Angola Chamber of Commerce has been around now for 20 years. It's a pinnacle year for us. We really are looking at how to celebrate this anniversary with really allowing Angola to rebrand itself in the eyes of many here in this country and to really understand that there have been many changes that are taking place and that there is a new, fresh wind with a lot of good things that are starting to go on in Angola today. We are, I guess, the oldest chamber promoting bilateral relations in terms of trade and investment for Angola. And as I said, we have our 20th anniversary. We're delighted that we have two of the members of the delegation who are here from Angola for the World Bank annual meetings. And namely, they are Mr. Ricardo Villegas de Abreu, who is the vice governor of the Central Bank. And we have Mr. Manuel de Costa, who is the Secretary of State Secretary of the Treasury, of State for Treasury. Mr. Abreu graduated from the University of Bath in the UK. He has a degree in economics and an MBA from the same university. For 12 years, he has been in various managerial roles in the private banking sector in Angola. Since 2009, he has integrated the board of directors of the Banque Nationale of Angola as the vice governor. He's participated in setting up the Angolan Sovereign Wealth Fund, and he has been a guest speaker in a number of workshops and seminars related to the financial system. He likes music, literature, and some other things like boating. Mr. Da Costa is also an economist. He has a BA from Agostinho Neto University in Angola. He holds a master's in economic policy from Columbia University, the School of International Affairs here in New York. Since 1998, he has served as the Director of Studies and International Relations in the Ministry of Finance, and he has also served as the Assistant Economic Advisor to the President of the Republic. I will turn it over to them for brief comments this morning. And maybe quickly, just name an affiliation.
Yeah, if you can just quickly introduce who you are so our speakers have some idea of the audience. Why don't we start here?
Ted Gilletti, I'm a board member of BAA, Banco Africano de Investimentos. It's the first private bank in Angola.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dunlap with the Scowcroft Group.
David Troop is CSIS Africa.
Samuels International Associates.
I'm Mike Samuels from Samuels International Associates.
And the founder of the CSIS Africa program, I should say.
So, Dr. Abreu, may I ask you to make some initial comments, please? Mr. De Costa, please.
Thank you, madam. First of all, I'd like to thank the Angolan or the U.S. Angola Chamber of Commerce for inviting us for this exchange. It will be an opportunity for the members to get, and not only the members, but all the guests, firsthand information regarding the recent developments on the issues that were proposed. I think two issues that were presented are at the forefront of concern of the government in terms of improving the monetary policy as well as following or putting in place standards that are internationally recognized as to prevent money laundering and financing of terrorism. And another issue of concern, great concern of the government of Angola is related to diversification of the economy, given the fact that they are greatly dependent on the oil sector. And after the end of the war, it has been a concern really of the government to improve the conditions, to unleash private oil activity. And I think we'll have opportunity to briefly address issues related to the opportunities of investment for the members of the Chambers of Commerce. I think I give the floor to Deputy Governor Abreu to talk briefly on the issues relating to monetary policy and the provisions and measures that the central bank and the government are taking in order to comply with the standards of anti-money laundering and combating of financing terrorism. Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear President of the U.S. Angola Chamber of Commerce, Director for the SCIS company. We would like to also thank you for the invitation, and thank you all the attendants to this brief conversation about the Angolan challenges. We'll try to at least give you a bit of insight of what we have been doing in our country to overcome the existing challenges that we face, and also position our country as an important economy in the context of the region, the African Southern Africa region, but also in the continent and the global economy. As you and as the Secretary of State just mentioned, Angola has is an oil-producing economy, and obviously that the relevance of the oil sector into the economy poses an extreme challenge to the central bank in regards to the monetary policy conduction. Our revenue stream to the budget majority is dollar related, so 75% of our revenue to the budget is dollar denominated because of the stream of the tax revenue from the oil sector. And also in terms of our external accounts, to sustain our current account, obviously that the flows of foreign currency into the economy are extremely relevant. Obviously that creates a challenge for our role in terms of central bank, because the budget execution has to be done through the sales of dollars into the market to sterilize the kwanzas that will be used to budget execution. And because of that, obviously that we face several challenges in terms of our exchange market, in terms of our exchange rate, and also the dollarization issue in our economy. So since the crisis in 2008-2009, where the impact of the crisis in Angola is normally through the world demand for oil products, and if that reduces the demand of the oil products, necessarily Angola has an impact on its accounts. And the impact goes through not only the reduction of the revenue into the budget, but also the flow of foreign currency, which we use to stabilize our internal exchange market. Because of that, and in 2008-2009, we end up having an extreme pressure internally in terms of our exchange market, in terms of our customer portfolio of the banking system moving towards the safety net of the dollar-denominated deposits. And that actually amplified the impact of the crisis in our economy, actually reducing the level of our reserves in around, in a yearly basis in 2009 at around $5.7 billion. So since then, we've been trying to initiate a process of restructuring of our policy instruments, exactly to prepare our economy, or at least our financial system, for a possible second impact. And as you all know, the world economy is still wondering what is actually happening and how the world will overcome this imminent crisis that we have not only in US but also in Europe. So we need to prepare ourselves to have a more resilient type of economy and being able to have our financial system not immune but at least resilient also to external shocks. So one of the objectives there, and refocusing our main and principal function to fight against inflation, is to indeed establish a new and stronger number of instruments for monetary policy conduction through a normal and indirect instruments to conduct the monetary policy. And obviously, to do that and to be successful in terms of giving a more sustainable ground for our financial system, we indeed need to reduce the level of dollarization of our economy. 50% of our total deposits in the system are dollar-denominated. 50% of our credit to the economy is also dollar-denominated. And we need to reduce the level of dollarization of the economy in order to have a more effective monetary policy impact in the economy. And the objective here, and since the Angolan perspective for growth and development in its diversification of the economy objective is concerned, we definitely need to have a reduction in inflation so we can have the cost, a reduction on the cost of capital to the economy, allowing the banking sector to also be a source of promotion of growth and market development. Therefore, we initiated in 2010 a number of measures. We are not using and we are not going through an administrative approach to the system. We are introducing prudential measures into the system, reducing the level of foreign currency exposure to the of the banks, increasing the provision level for foreign currency credit into the solvency ratio, also inhibiting the banks to grant short-term credit in foreign currency into the economy, and on the other hand, trying to promote the introduction of new instruments for liquidity management of the banks. We are since 2010 as well, and in a strong relationship with the Ministry of Finance, have established a continuous and permanent securities market, whereby we have the Ministry of Finance issuing securities from 91 days up to 364, and obviously during the course of this year or next year, we will have also longer maturities in terms of public securities, and the central bank being allowed to use the fine-tuned instruments in terms of liquidity management, such as the open market operations, overdraft facilities to the banks as well as instruments to take liquidity into the market in the short term. So the idea is to introduce a number of indirect instruments for liquidity management into the market, allowing the interest rates to be at a reasonable level, given our still inflation rate, but allowing the financial system to have a variety of instruments to manage its liquidity, obviously in the sense of having a reduced cost of capital, so the credit can be one of the drivers of our economic growth and the objective of the economic diversification. That's obviously also complemented via a restructuring that we also initiated in our supervision and regulation department. We need to indeed have the right set of regulations as well as behavior of the banks. We have just splitted our supervision department into two different areas to actually address two different subjects. One is our supervision that will have a more prudential approach to the system, allowing the analysis and assessment of the banks in terms of its capacity to perform in a prudential manner the market. And we established just very recently a new department that will handle the behavioral side of the supervision. The behavioral side is something that will that we are putting together to enhance the rights of the banking customers, and allowing banks to indeed offer to the market exactly what they are promoting. And that's why we also established the behavioral supervision department that will handle that part of the bank's performance in terms of market performance. Obviously that we also, and since 2010, speed up the process of position Angola in terms of the legal and regulatory framework for AML and CFT.
What are AML?
AML is anti-money laundering.
Oh, okay.
And counter... Sorry about that. But since 2010, and given the fact that the Angolan AML and CFT law puts the financial intelligence unit under supervision of the central bank, we indeed initiate a process to recover partially the time we lost in terms of implementation of our legal and regulatory framework for these subjects. And since then, we were able to not only engage in the various international organizations that are responsible to to oversee the implementation status of the countries, and we also entered in the regional organization that in Africa, or at least in our region, is responsible to also look after the implementation status of the countries. We established in February, through a presidential decree, the Financial Intelligence Unit of Angola. We have also initiated the regulation of the Angolan banking financial system. And the reason to initiate the banking financial system, it's because we don't have, in terms of overall financial system, the biggest portion of the financial system is occupied by the banking system. So we still have a long way to go in terms of other financial institutions. Obviously, that the insurance business is also relevant, but we are focusing more on the financial system. So, and the central bank also during this year introduced the customer due diligence procedures and regulations to the banking system, and also the procedures for reporting of suspicious transactions to the Financial Intelligence Unit. Currently, Angola is an observer member of SMLAG, which is the Eastern and Southern Africa AML group. Is also and has been participated in the FATF meetings, not only the technical meetings but also on the plenary meetings. We have also been participate on the ICRG, which is the review groups that look after the implementation of the AML CFT frameworks. And we are now in the process of finalizing our mutual evaluation report, which will have an important moment in November, first week November, when we will have the World Bank a review team moving to Luanda to have or to make its on-site a review of the Angola self-assessment report. With that self-assessment, Angola will have at least a very comprehensive understanding of what is the actual legal and regulatory framework, the existing regulatory framework, that will be validated through a reasonable, credible institution, which is the World Bank. I think that we can't dispute that. And with that, we will also be able to, with the transparency that the Angolan government is putting forward, we will be able to indeed have a clear view of the steps for implementation of the Angola anti-money laundering and terrorism financing legal framework. In terms of our relationship with international entities via multilateral institutions or via bilateral institutions, we have also been in talks with the U.S. authorities, which are very open and desirable to assist Angola in the implementation process of the an effective FIU. To sum up, the idea is, and we are in at least on the central bank level, we are moving towards a path that will allow us to have a very transparent, consistent, and also a reliable system in terms of our instruments to conduct the monetary policy. Obviously, that the close relationship and cooperation with the Ministry of Finance is extremely important to secure the stability and sustainability of our financial market. The the existing framework will allow us to indeed have a process of cost sharing in terms of the monetary policy burden, which is extremely positive, and obviously allowing the market to have a clear understanding in terms of the indications of the monetary policy. We are in a country that has significant potential. In the very recent years, obviously the construction was one of the major the construction sector was one of the major drivers of our growth. The government has put together a very aggressive plan for the reconstruction of Angola in terms of its infrastructure, and the transmission of the growth was done through the construction sector to the economy. Obviously, that the challenges are there. The diversification of the economy is extremely important, not only to allow Angola to reach a level of self-sufficiency in terms of agriculture, but also to reduce the level of our dependency on the international markets in terms of exports and even expenditure of foreign currency, which we could use in our international reserves for other purposes. Obviously, that the infrastructure of the country will continue, but as according to our long-term plan, from 2012 up to 2000, from 2002 up to 2012, Angola should finalize its first phase in terms of development path. And the first phase would be comprised by the reconstruction of the basic infrastructure of the country. Obviously, that the crisis impact was exactly in the middle of that path. But hopefully, at least that the basic level of infrastructure is already established from the roads, from the bridges, from the ports, from the airports, from the railway network, which is starting to become operational. And that will definitely allow us to move to a different stage now, which is a stage for the sustainable growth. Obviously, that the new variables will now be called. Obviously, that the qualitative issues will now be one of the most important variables to take into consideration for the next steps of our economy. I will close here my intervention and will be open to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you very much.
Let me say a few words on the diversification of the economy. We face several challenges on this area. As Vice Governor has mentioned, we have our economy relies on the oil sector. It accounts for around 90% of the foreign exchange revenue, 75% of the fiscal revenue, and 45% of GDP. And this substantial inflow of foreign exchange creates pressure for appreciation of the domestic currency. And given the fact that almost the non-oil sector was non-existent by the time that the civil war ended, it posed a challenge because it's much cheaper to import than produce locally. So this is why the government has been trying to address the factors that are conducive to an environment that could unleash the private non-economic activity. One of the areas in which the government is focusing is basic infrastructure. We, in terms of the focus and priorities, are the roads, the bridges, telecommunication, and electricity. On this area, we have now a deficit, substantial deficit, but that might increase if investments are not done on this area. This is why the government decided to set up an oil fund for infrastructure, in which the equivalent of sales of 100,000 barrels a day of oil are allocated. At the moment, and this was set from the second half of 2010. So far, we have accumulated around $3.5 billion on that fund. Another challenge that we have is entrepreneurship capacity. Because, as you are aware, we actually are in transition as well from centralized economy to market economy, and from war to peace. And during the centralized economy era, private activity were not allowed, and during the colonial years, even shoe shiners were settlers. Locals did not have access to economic activity, so it is a fabric that we have to construct. Apart from what I like to call rentiers, those who are just after for to grab some money, not engaging in real entrepreneurship and investment. One other area. In which we face challenge is provision of public service in education and health, and improve quality of these services. During the Civil War, many school year children could not have access to schools, and the government was not able to provide health services in a substantial part of the territory. Once the war ended, it is the role of the government to provide the education service. And though there have been massive investment in building schools and health facilities, it take years to train staff, the teachers and nurses and doctors, and it's really a challenge, because in terms of education, with the massive inflow of children in the system, the quality reduced, and it will take time to revert the curve in terms of quality. We are working with multilateral institutions like the World Bank in order to address this issue. And One other area in which the government is focusing, given the potential that that we have, is agriculture. And in this area, the problem that we have is the costs and productivity. And the government is investing in putting in place a chain of logistic support, because right after the war, production of some crops increased, but then because the producer could not have access to the markets in order to sell their products, they reverted in terms of to a subsistence level. And whether it's to have access to inputs like fertilizer, or to gain access to the markets, there is a real problem there. In the first phase, as the vice governor has stressed, the most important road has been rebuilt. But now the focus is in more secondary roads that provide access to producers, to the main markets. But as well, in terms of provision of assistance services, there is some investment there, and as well some infrastructure, because the problems in terms of productivity, the low yields are related to the fact that we rely mainly from the good climate environment. If there are no rains in the, with the late changes in climate changes, some activities have been affected, and in some traditional areas in which some crops were grown substantially has been affected, and this is why one of the areas of focus as well is provision of this service, so that not only for in terms of logistics of drain the productions to the markets, but as well facilities like irrigation and access to fertilizer at a low cost for the producers. So I stop here, and we have some time for changing.
Great. Let's thank you both very much. I'm going to have to go back to some of my financial policy courses from back when. But why don't we open up for questions on the banking issue? And it goes to something that you said about the kind of entrepreneurship capacity, farmers' access to fertilizer and so forth. Two things on the banking restructuring that you're doing. One is, how does this affect kind of the small and medium entrepreneur within Angola in terms? And B, do you see this kind of launching kind of a proliferation of banks? Competition among banks? I mean, how do you see it affecting kind of the incentives of the banking sector, the new restructuring, and is there pushback in any quarters? Just because I have trouble thinking through what the implications are, and we've got a couple of folks from the banking sector here who might want to comment as well. But why don't we take a couple at a time? If people have comments, or we can answer that and questions and come back to that. Yes.
Yes, in terms of the anti-money laundering program, to what extent have you been getting technical assistance on that, and do you think it's been worthwhile, the external technical assistance?
Sorry, could you repeat?
Yes, on the anti-money laundering and counterterrorism technical assistance, to what extent has Angola been getting technical assistance either from, for instance, the IMF or any of the other international organizations, especially considering the the report that FATF has put on Angola and the adverse impact that is, and the fact that you're trying at such an accelerated pace to meet the international standards.
Yes.
Hello. Angola recently passed a new investment law, and one of the consequences is that the new law would invalidate the agreement with OPIC as it relates to the taxation of companies in Angola that OPIC invests in. And I was wondering, is my understanding correct? And if so, has the Angolan government initiated discussions with OPIC to resolve that problem?
Why don't we start there and then come back for another round?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, as Secretary of State mentioned, and I will start with your two questions about the medium and small entrepreneurs and the competition. As the Secretary of State mentioned, we are now in a phase of creating and establishing a strong or at least sustainable entrepreneurship base in Angola. The market economy or a competitive market economy started in the 90s, early 90s, and obviously that it takes time to have a strong base of corporate entities and entrepreneurs in the market with the experience and skills that we need to also contribute to the growth of our economy. But in terms of the small and medium size, we obviously see in our market a number of various small and medium size entities, and it is one of the programs of the government, the promotion and integration of those small and medium size entities into the banking system. We recently had the discussion in the National Assembly of a new law that is intent to facilitate the establishment of small and medium-sized companies, exactly to promote the financial integration of the small and medium-sized business in Angola and assisting in terms of also financial supporting programs those entities is likely to promote the entrepreneurship status of Angola. We, in terms of our market structure, and what we, in terms of the central bank, are trying to put together is not only the policy framework but the regulatory framework, which will allow to have our banking system the normal conditions, the predictable conditions, the reliable conditions, and the confidence to continue investing in the opportunities in the Angolan system. We are talking about an economy of 10 to 15% bankerization level, which is very low if we consider the size of our country and the size of our population. Obviously, that the financial deepening, if we look at the numbers to the non-oil GDP, we are talking about in our market of having our financial system representing 50% of our GDP, non-oil GDP, which is already something interesting in terms of financial deepening. But in the end of the day, the room to grow is enormous, and the central bank has and the institutions responsible for the economic policy, having in mind the objective of macroeconomic stability and an economic path of inflation reduction to reduce the cost of capital, is exactly to establish the right platform for growth and development. And the financial system is obviously, and the banking system in particular, is obviously one of the important areas that we have. We still have, in terms of financial system, a long way to go because we have not yet initiated our capital markets institution. Our stock exchange has not yet started. There's a new commission that is in place to speed up the process of at least initiating transactions in regards to the to securities, mainly public securities, but to at least initiate the process of leveraging some of the transactions in our market. Obviously, that the advent of the capital markets and the stock exchange will also impact in the structure or the competitive structure of the banking system. The banks will have a new mechanisms for leveraging their activity, their investments, and also to strengthen its capital base. So we still have their room. We are concerned about other issues currently, exposure issues to in international markets, which are facing very difficult problems now in Europe, such as Portugal. That's something of major concern. But in the end of the day, we are confident that our system will prevail and will continue the investment efforts that it's been doing since the 90s. In regards to the technical assistance, the AML, yes, we've been working. We have a resident consultant entity in Angola. We've been working with the World Bank. The World Bank has been assisting Angola, and we had a very interesting session of legislative production in Luanda. It's the World Bank that will be coming to Luanda for the on-site assessment, and prior to the assessment, we will have also a training, a pre on-site review training process by the World Bank. But we are also in talks with U.S. Treasury in order to, in terms of the FIU type of assistance, being able to receive also and have the experts of the Treasury moving to Luanda. We have already a resident expert in Luanda from the Treasury, but it's not for the AML subject, but we also intend to have one for the AML subject.
What is he there for?
Sorry?
What is he or she there for, the resident expert from Treasury?
He's for the debt management and debt strategy and asset liability framework. New investment law.
I,
don't know if you could elaborate more on this. I'm not aware of an issue that came out from the approval of a new investment law. Can you elaborate this? Refer to the OPEC.
It's my understanding that when OPEC does business in a
It's my understanding that when OPEC does a business with a country and investment, they the business that OPEC invests in does not have to pay taxes to the state. In other words, they get an exemption from that. And this new law.
Overseas Private Investment Corporation. It's a U.S.
Okay.
Not OPEC.
Okay.
So, are we on the same page now? Do you want me to keep going? Yeah, I'm finished. So it's my understanding that when OPEC invests in a company, that company is gets an exemption from having to pay taxes to the state. But this new investment law says that this company does have to pay taxes.
I'm not aware of that, but there is no provision for, how do you call it?
I was going to ask if anyone from either ANIP or from the commercial sector of the embassy may want to assist with that question as well.
The law has been changed, and I have a copy of the law here. And what it says is that the incentives, the fiscal incentives or the tax incentives that have been granted in the past, you know, are still in place. But they cannot be extended after the period that that have been granted. For example, if you are an investor and you got this incentive in 2006 for 15 years, after the 15 years, you cannot extend under the previous law. That will be a standard applicable anywhere else in the world.
That is the government is much concerned in guaranteeing the stability of the contract. So there is no retroactions in terms of the new laws that come into place.
As I understand it, there have already been discussions between U.S. government officials and some officials within the Angolan government, and I don't know which and at what level, but in Luanda, and the U.S. government officials from the U.S. supported Overseas Private Investment Corporation have returned, believing that the current law will require a new negotiation for a new government-to-government agreement related to allowing the U.S. Overseas Private Investment Corporation to provide the kinds of assistance, which include insurance for investments, to U.S. investors. And this is an issue that I do think the right-level officials in Angola and the right-level officials in Washington need to look at with care. And that you may be unaware of it leads me to think that perhaps the communication process within the various institutions in Luanda hasn't been working as well as it probably should.
Okay, thank you. It's just an answer for the gentleman. I'd like to let him know, everybody knows that our office in Angola, ANIP, received more than 50% of the proposals and approved more than 50% of the projects from Angolans and some African countries. Thank you.
No, I think the Vice Governor has said that it's not a problem of the wealthy or poor. Now, in the past, we used to have, due to the dollarization of the economy, usually people would prefer to keep their savings in U.S. dollars. And local banks, that receive the deposits do not keep the money. They have correspondence, and they at the time, actually, in terms of given the fact that the schools pose a problem in terms of the monetary policy management, banks were required to invest at least 50%, if not 50% of their the assets abroad. This has been changing, as the representative of NIP has said. Regarding the appetite of, you might be aware that in 2009, the government was close to issue up to equivalent of two billion U.S. dollars in euro bonds without rating. Things did not happen that way. Recently, we were considering. Fortunately, we advanced in having a sovereign rating that have been upgraded from B plus to B minus recently. We consider the approach of the market based on the needs to fund the gap in terms of required revenue for the budget. Given the recent developments in the international financial markets and the stance of our fiscal accounts, we are not considering it in a short term to approach the market. I leave it to the Vice Governor to address the challenge of monetary policy that comes from the payment of arrears. But you might be aware that not all the arrears were paid in cash. We negotiated with the major creditors to pay in installments, and some of the debt were securitized. So, in order to avoid substantial pressure in the market.
Yeah. Just to add there the comment on what the Secretary of State just mentioned. Indeed, the arrears possibly have created in the past the issue of pressure in terms of the banking system. Obviously, that we felt through the statistics an increase of the NPL on average, in the overall system, regards to the arrears. We also felt that the banks had were pressured in terms of their liquidity capacity. But as the Secretary of State mentioned, the repayment of the arrears have been settled in a orderly fashion in order to. Reduce the possible impact of a sudden growth of our money supply and money aggregates. So things are happening. The market is stable. We believe that the banks are currently more confident. We at least the numbers that we have show a reduction on the to the traditional levels of the overall system NPLs. an NPL stands for non-performing loans. But in the end of the day, we feel that the market is currently more stable and confident of the future. When we talk about where the Angolans keep their money, I think that sometimes we exaggerate on that proposition, because we are talking about an economy that until 2002 had not the opportunity to establish a comprehensive macroeconomic and development framework. Only since 2002, Angola was able to establish a macroeconomic program and process, and also a strategy for long-term development, only from 2002. And if we look at the efforts that have been done through since then, and possibly initiating and triggering from 2004-2005, we are talking about a seven-year process in this path. So if we look at what we have achieved so far, not only in terms of the local infrastructure, at least the program to rebuild the basic infrastructure of the country, if we look at what we are trying also to put together in terms of the legal and regulatory frameworks, both on the governance issues as well as in the compliance issues in terms of the international market. And in the governance side, we have been introducing a significant number of structural measures to increase transparency, to increase the issue of accountability of the public finance execution, and in the compliance, trying to move our standards and our regulatory standards to international benchmarks. If we look, that has been done. All of this has been done in 7 years. I think that it's something to be recognized and accepted. That's why in my in some of my readings, and obviously one of the reports that I very recently had a chance to look at was exactly this report that we have here on the table. And I think that sometimes we don't really use the exact words to describe the challenges of our economy that we believe that we all, in terms of the Angolan government, have the notion, and we are also moving. We have already steps initiated or processes engaged to address some of the issues. And sometimes I really don't feel that the words are fair. It's an issue of fairness, because we are talking about a country that is 7 years old. Thank you.
The Angolan economy has fluctuated dramatically in terms of GDP growth over the last few years. What policies does the government have to try and minimize those great fluctuations other than diversification? That's my first question. Second one, 30% of your oil goes, I think, to the People's Republic of China, and they're heavily involved in many infrastructural projects. I don't suppose you have a balance of trade problem at the moment, but when your growth rate went down in 2008-2009 to 1.3%, did that cause you to think about managing potential debt burden which might emerge with China? And my third thing is commercial agricultural production. You're talking about restarting food production and agricultural exports. How important do you envisage foreign commercial agricultural investment to be, and how closely correlated is that with investment on irrigation?
Okay, thanks. Actually, David has asked him one of my questions, so I ask only another one. Governor, you have mentioned that your economic will finish the first stage, that is to reconstruction your infrastructure. So you will turn to the next stage in the near future. In terms of foreign investment, so what are the most preferred fields of your economy for the next stage? So thanks.
Well, on the measures to counteract the fluctuation in the sector, as I said, the government established recently an oil fund that will provide for smoothing up expenditures in terms of capital investment, mainly. And we have adopted as a fiscal anchor the an oil primary balance. The idea is to to make it less, to reduce pro-cyclicality of the public expenditures, though it we might reduce these fluctuations in short term, but only in the medium term we can fully address the issue, given the fact that, as I said, we have 75% to 80% of the fiscal revenue coming from the oil sector, and one of after the end of the civil war, government has to address many social problems that were generated from these 27 years of civil war in terms of improving the service delivery. And naturally have to cover this expenditure with part of from coming from the oil revenue. The fact it's a challenge as well, because as there is growth in terms of investment in the provision of health and education services, there is an increase as well in recurrent expenditures that has to be covered by part of the oil revenue. So it's a challenge. But this is the measures that the government has taken, establishing an oil fund that can be used as well to smooth up the expenditure. Yes, I mean reminded that we are conducting a reform on our taxation system that will cover areas of the tax system itself in terms of improving the efficiency of the administration and setting up a body that deals with tax litigations that will go in the direction of the diversification of the tax base as well. In terms of investment in agriculture, there is no restriction in terms of foreign investment in agriculture or commercial agriculture. Though we have by now the assessment is that 60% of our population relies on agriculture, and as I said, there is at a subsistence level, and that with low yields, and if we have to overcome the deficit in terms of food production, I think we should integrate the commercial or consider a commercial activity on this area, and we have potential in agriculture that can be explored, not just to provide to supply the local market. It is too small, but for exports as well. On
which one? The yes, thank you, Secretary. Just to answer the question on the phase. Indeed, we on our medium to long term development plan, we had the first phase finishing in 2012, which entailed the reconstruction of the basic infrastructure of the country. Second phase or the following phases will be the introduction of a more qualitative variables into our overall development process through the through achieving the sustainable growth of our economy. And the sustainable growth of our economy will definitely will have to address issues like the Secretary of State just mentioned, which is having a continuous, steady path of growth instead of having a growth that is fluctuated by the behavior of the oil exports into the economy. So the new stage will be a stage that will allow us continuously having a positive growth of our economy and also addressing the qualitative issues and challenges that we still have. In terms of the sectors of our economy, definitely we see agriculture as one of our important one of our important sectors for development. And because of that, the government also had to get involved in the promotion process of agricultural projects. And obviously that after this first phase of investment promotion on the agriculture, we will definitely have to address the value chain of the agriculture sector. And in terms of logistics, in terms of conservation, in terms of transportation, in terms of distribution. So it's quite a lot of aspects that we'll have to address in putting together the right value chain for the agribusiness. Obviously that Angola, besides the oil sector, is a very strong country in terms of minerals, other minerals than oil. So it's time to also promote investments on that area, and obviously that the industry comes next, and also the services sector as the opportunities arise in terms of our capital markets, in terms of our financial institutions and market developments. Thank you.
I'd like to respond on the question of indebtedness and the question with China. Well, you might be aware that the structure, as Vice Governor said, we have we are developing a long-term debt strategy with the help of a resident consultant from the U.S. Treasury. But the profile of our debt that was not did not result from conceived strategy, but the circumstances that in case China, we had two credit lines that from the Exim Bank from China, and the you know how the Exim Banks work. It's promote exports from the creditor country. That was the source that at the time was available to fund our needs in terms of the reconstruction, because we the donors conference did not happen, the investment conference did not happen, the Chinese were looking after the oil or some other commodities, and they opened up a credit line of $2 billion US dollars. They get oil, we get money, though limited to importing goods from China, but it wasn't a stage. But the exposure is not that great. We have credit lines from other bilateral credit lines. We have a problem with Portugal, as with that crisis. But I'd like to say that we might not be satisfied with that profile that we have, our level of indebtedness is low. 38% of GDP total. External debt is less than 20%.
Okay. We are out of time. I want to say a really warm thank you to our guest today. I think it's telling that you said, you know, the words are not always fair. Part of the problem is that there haven't been that many countervailing voices and voices from the ground explaining what is happening here. And this is exactly kind of the discussion we do want to promote. You know, criticism is good, it's healthy, but it's good to have, as you say, the from the ground perspective on what's happening day to day. I know you're needing to move to your next meeting, so I'll keep the thanks short, but we would welcome you back to Washington. We hope at some point to perhaps see you in Luanda. A big thanks to the embassy and to the U.S. Angola Chamber of Commerce for helping put this together. And thank you all. Please join me in...